You ready to rock and roll?
I'm ready to rock and roll.
All right, man. Listen, it's been a long time.
I feel we shouldn't have left
without a dope beat to step to.
Step two.
All right, man. So what's going on? What's new? You know, before we get into the preliminaries, the rumor and innuendo. And yes, I've been listening to a lot of Bruce Pritchard and Conrad Thompson. I like their podcast, man.
I was gonna say, so yeah, before we get to it, tell me what you like about Something to Wrestle.
This isn't something I like, but something I noticed. Bruce Pritchard reminds me a lot of you, just in like his cadence, how he talked. No, was it Bruce Pritchard or was it Conrad? No, Bruce Pritchard. It's Bruce Pritchard. The knowledge, right? And just in the way that he describes certain things. Bruce Pritchard talks like he is giving a soliloquy at all times. Talks like he's giving some grand oratory.
I was going to say, if I did sound like Conrad, it shouldn't be too surprising since, you know, he's from Alabama and my people from Alabama. So
yeah, listening to you now was like listening to them all over again. Just stop talking. No, I love the fact that Dave Meltzer is the devil. According to Bruce
Pritchard.
And it's a good flow. I love you know, for a wrestling fan, not just you know, a WWE mark, but for a fan of professional wrestling, I enjoy it because they do a lot. Like I loved that episode on Chris Jericho. Just how they dive into a lot of the stuff. And because Bruce was there, they had a great episode on Jim Ross that I really thoroughly enjoyed. So enough about their podcast. We got our own podcast.
Yes. Yes, we do. So ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, congregants of the Camel Clutch, welcome to the Preachers and Pinfalls podcast. So let's get to it. Wrestling is back on my radar.
Yeah, you've been gone. You've been MIA, man.
So look, man. You know, like about a month and somewhere close to 100,000 page views on SaturdayBliss.com.
Oh, you know,
yeah, man. I am relearning how to have a job and a side hustle because it's been a while since I did that.
yeah, I know. So when you send me that text, I said, "Yeah, my boy." He's getting tried by fire. You know, he's learning again.
Yeah, man. So I'm learning the art of scheduling and time management, and it's going well. So wrestling's back on the radar. I was kind of thumbing through some stuff. I don't know. Did you have anything outside the ring that you wanted to address?
You know, Dante, I had three things at the beginning of last week. And not because I thought we were recording last week. It's just I had a lot of stuff I was prepared. I was holding until we talked. I forgot about them. I forgot what they were. It was really good. I think. Oh, there we go. Ha-ha, here's something that might tickle your fancy for those fiend fans out there, the fans of the new and improved Bray Wyatt. There's some rumor and innuendo, right, borrowing from our good friend Conrad. Luke Harper might be coming back, and we may see what's being hinted at is a reunion of the Wyatt family. We have Eric Rowan that kind of went rogue on Daniel Bryan. He's got like a semi-feud with Roman Reigns going on. And the rumor and innuendo is that they're setting up the stage for Luke Harper to come back, and they're going to bring the family back again. Don't know how they're going to do that with him being the Fiend. So that's just one of the small rumors I heard.
So, yeah, that would be a little ironic. And we're going to talk a little bit about that Rowan promo. I do like the Killer Kowalski like iron claw choke slam he does though.
Yeah, I do like that too.
Because so if he goes back with the Wyatts, that kind of destroys the premise of his promo because he's like, "Hey, I don't want to be controlled, but Bray Wyatt, you can control me." No, and ironically enough, I would be completely for that. Number one, Luke Harper not doing anything is a waste, and I don't know if Luke Harper is good enough to be World Heavyweight Champion, but he's good enough to work and to do something with. But you know, Vince McMahon just petty because he can't do a Southern accent, you know. And he's not the only one that's it's a waste by just doing nothing. So, man, that would be something. Like, so Luke Harper should like bring like some sort of like mutated Harley Quinn / Bludgeon Brothers hammer.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. But then I think that takes away from The Fiend, though, right? Wouldn't you agree? Like, that takes away. I think The Fiend is only effective as The Fiend because he's a solo act. He's not Bray Wyatt anymore. I think, to me, that would kind of knock that edge off a little bit. Don't you agree?
Unless the demon comes back as his pet.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. You know, no. You heard that here first on the last episode. If WWE ends up doing that, they got that from us, okay?
So yes, they do. Yes,
they do. It's not like they've never bitten an idea before. Dun, dun, dun.
That's true.
So
so you text me last week.
I did.
About Owen Hart.
I did.
And so what kind of inspired this Owen Hart idea?
I want to just let the listening audience know that I would text Dante I would text him 10 text messages, like just random things, and he will respond to about 3 of them. So I was so great because when I sent you this, you didn't say anything. I was like, oh, okay, well, you kind of, I guess he doesn't want to talk about that. But then I saw it on the run sheet, and I was like, okay, very cool, thank you. Bruce Pritchard and Conrad Thompson had the conversation was not about Owen. It was about the blue meaning. It was something, some angle. I think they were talking about Owen's death, and they kind of skated past it because it was a part of a larger conversation. They spent maybe 2 minutes, 3 minutes talking about it, the tragedy behind it. And then I got to thinking, you know, as I was driving, gosh, if Owen would not have, you know, died the tragic way that he did, if he wouldn't have died at all, mm-hmm. Owen would have gone on to have a successful career. And I'm talking about post Brett leaving. Because if I'm not mistaken, Dante, you know, was Brett already out the door? The Montreal Screwjob happened.
Yeah.
And Brett was at WCW. Owen died a little bit after that, or it had been some time after that?
So I'm looking at it now. And so I can tell you that I thought Owen's run was longer. Then it really was.
Yeah, I said that to myself too.
Because, so I remember Owen Hart made his debut. This is back when they would do things like this at WrestleMania. He made his debut at WrestleMania 8 in Indianapolis, wearing like these horrible, like MC Hammer checker pants. But the Blue Blazer gimmick, if I'm not mistaken, and I don't think I am, And I actually think I actually got this from Bruce Pritchard. He may be in the continuum of this podcast. I want to say that the Blue Blazer gimmick was one Owen started in Canada before he came to WWE. That was something that he carried with him in his back pocket. Because I remember before he was wrestling in WWE full time, my first ever wrestling show was 19, let me see, WrestleMania 6 was 1989, so maybe 1989. And the Blue Blazer wrestled that show. But he would wrestle part time as the Blue Blazer, like starting like 1988. And then he came on full time as Owen Hart in 92.
And when did he win King of the Ring?
He won King of the Ring in I'll get you that information in a moment.
So with that, with what you just talked about with the Blue Blazer, King of the Ring, mm-hmm. and, you know, his brief run in WWF, like post Brett leaving, where do you think Owen Hart would be in the company? I'm talking during the Attitude era, during the thick of the Attitude era, because I think, man, he would have been such a great antagonist for so many of like those top baby faces, like a white hot Austin. I think Owen would have been a great antagonist to him. And with that being said, we may have never gotten the great rivalry between Stone Cold and Rock, right? Or Austin and Triple H, because, you know, Owen wasn't there or Brett wasn't there. But I even think about like what I call the Evolution era, like when Cena and Batista or Owen in that, like I think that would have been some magical stuff. Even you know, not today, but maybe 5-6 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like Owen in that, I can see Owen working in developmental. Like where do you see Owen?
Man, so
in 2019.
Let's see, in 2019, let's see, Owen would be 44. Man, I mean, I would say number one, Owen's definitely a multi-time world heavyweight champion.
You think so? Okay.
Oh, absolutely. Man, look, and Triple H said it on a couple of the DVDs of his that I own. Man, when Owen died, he was really just coming into his own. Which makes sense. So I remember Stone Cold was talking about this on one of his podcasts. He said, you know, wrestlers really don't really come into their own until they've had like 10 years in the business. Because he was like, and he said, look, when the Stone Cold persona hit, he was like, I was in it 10 years. And he was like, I was in good enough condition physically to still go out and work, but I knew enough about what to do in the ring because I had all of this time in.
Yeah.
And so Owen had, see, Owen started at like 18. So, you know, by the time he passed, he had 16 years in the business. And here's a hot take. And I'll say this about my hot take. I think part of my issue with Brett is that his WCW run was so bad. I think Owen had more natural charisma than Bret Hart.
Hands down. I just said to myself today that, and I don't know, some wrestling fanatic listening to this might crucify me. Brett was a great technical wrestler, but to me, Brett was not as great as we say he is. Yeah. Like, when you talk about the Mount Rushmore of wrestlers, you know, I don't see Brett on that. Top ten.
I would disagree with that because of how I have Mount Rushmore arguments.
Okay, and so let's not even go into the Mount Rushmore. Yeah. Let's just say we're talking about top tier, the best overall professional wrestlers over the past 20 years.
So to if me, I, if I put I'm them not, if I put them in just in one huge category.
Yeah.
If I put them in one huge category, and you go in the last 25 years, yeah, Brett's in that top 10.
Brett's in that top tier. Yeah, I agree. Now, let me backtrack and say, I don't want us to. I think we do Brett like we do, Tupac and Biggie Smalls. Again, I might get crucified. I said on my other podcast with my co-host, I said that we romanticize Biggie and Pac like they were the greatest rappers of all time when they were to me, they were not as good as we make them out to be. We romanticize them because they died. So, like very prematurely.
Okay, so, wait a minute. Because you're younger than me.
Yes.
Tell me, purely from a hip-hop perspective, one rapper in the last decade.
No, see, no. We're not doing the last decade, Dante. So if you were, because I'm a hip-hop head, my top three never change. It doesn't matter to past 10 years, past 20. It's always going to be Rakim, Big Daddy Kane, and then Jay-Z. That's always going to be my top three. Now, there are some honorable mentions, and I agree. Biggie is one of my favorite rappers. So,
do you understand in the continuum of East Coast hip hop, if there was no Biggie Smalls, there would be no Jay-Z?
I agree, but you can argue Big put Jay on. I know, but just because he put him on doesn't mean that he was a top tier rapper. Like, okay, hear what I'm saying though, Dante. I don't want you to, because I think that you're one of the people.
I don't romanticize him because he's dead.
Okay, but hear what I'm saying.
I was in high school when Big hit. Like, Rakim is the greatest rapper of all time. We agree on that. Like, I don't think there's anybody.
I just want you to hear what I'm saying. I'm not saying that Biggie and Pac are horrible rappers. I'm not saying that. I'm not even saying they're not deserving of being in the top five conversation. I'm saying, like, we do bread, we tend to, when people make an exit or we don't see the longevity of their career, we're quick to say, oh, they're the best of all time. But they did not get a chance to get to that all-time status. You know what I mean? Like, Brett left the company before we could really, with validity, say, okay, Brett was one of the best wrestlers in WWE, WWF, whatever. He split too soon before we could make that comparison, before we could make that equation. And Bruce Pritchard even talks about how there would be times in creative where they would say, regarding Brett, you know, let's book him like we would book Hogan. Because in their mind, okay, this is going to be the next Hogan. This is going to be longstanding, one of the best performers, entertainers. You can't make that comparison because he left too fast. So I'm saying in regards to that, and I'm going to touch on this Biggie and Pac thing again real quick. I love Christopher Wallace. Dante, hands down, one of my favorite rappers. I love his delivery, his style, his cadence. He revolutionized the game. He did. But when we talk about top tier rappers in the sense of skill set, I'm saying that we put him up there because he died. It's like the same thing we do with Brett. Like, oh, he's the best wrestler of all time.
Okay, I see your argument. I don't want to go down the street of Big, but I'm just saying, to me, I don't know if there's a better storytelling rapper than Notorious B.I.G. Just because I did it by accident once in high school, man. When you put on like track one of Ready to Die, you know, back in the day, I had like the four disc CD changer in my room, and you play that all the way through the last track of Life After Death, and you have to do it because people miss it. What you hear is the story of Big's alter ego, Frank White. People always miss that. Like, the continuum of his story is in those three CDs. And I don't think there's a better narrative rapper ever than Biggie Smalls. I can tell you because Big hit when I was in high school, like, I was a guy who was never really in the West Coast rap. Like, Snoop, to me, Snoop hit when Doggy Style hit, that was like hip hop classic. But Snoop has never done anything close to Doggy Style in his career.
No.
I was very much in the Southern rap. I was very much in the Memphis rap and Atlanta rap. But I've always been in the East Coast rap. And when Big hit, like when Juicy came out, and I was like, this dude taking like old songs that I remember listening to when I was little, where my auntie and my mom would have parties in my auntie's basement, and me and my cousin would be watching like WCW Saturday Night, and like it was the greatest thing I'd ever heard.
Listen, but Dante, we have to. We can do a whole episode.
And let me discuss. Let me go back to Brett. I agree with you.
Because I love this conversation.
I do think they over-romanticized Bret Hart. But what mars me with Bret, number one, is the WCW run.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think Bret gets credit for two things. The first thing is Bret was really the first, like, I'm going to give you a football comparison real quick if I can. Like, Bret was the first, like, postmodern pro wrestler. And what I mean by that, like, so in football, if you look at, like, quarterbacks from, like, the 60s and the 70s that are in the Hall of Fame.
Joe Namath.
And then you look at quarterbacks like from the 80s, you see the statistical difference. But like between them is this guy named Johnny Unitas, who was like the first modern quarterback. He was the first guy to come to line of scrimmage and call a play and change plays. And really the way the quarterback position is played now is because of him. Bret was really the first.
I see. Yeah.
And I don't think he gets credit for this. He was really the first wrestler who had a legitimate second act. Like, he was the first tag team wrestler, and the Hart Foundation.
Yeah, you're right.
Tag team. He was the first tag team guy to really break off and be a great singles wrestler. Because here's the thing, there are two guys who are really good that followed him. Davey Boy Smith,
mm-hmm.
British Bulldog.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy we know called Shawn Michaels. But I think two of the things also that kind of mars Bret, I know for me, was number one, and Shawn is as much to blame as Bret. I think Shawn, and Bruce said this on his podcast, until Bruce is gonna be in this continuum. Like, people give Shawn too much credit for messing that feud up. But because Bruce said, look, man, Bret was difficult to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Bret was quick to tell you no. Bret was always 30 minutes late. He said, but you just never heard about it. He said, but Bret was every bit the diva Shawn was. Shawn was just a little bit more outward with it than Bret was. But Bret is as much to blame for that rivalry never being what it was, as Shawn was.
I will even say this, Dante, and you can quote me on this. Outside of the Montreal Screwjob,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to sound like Vince McMahon when I say this. Bret is as much to blame for the lack of his career getting to a certain level.
Absolutely.
Like, I blame Bret. Like, And we talk about WCW, right? Those are the unmentionable days of Bret Hart post WWE. Yeah. You know, we don't really discuss that too much because it was all of the great things awful. He did. All of the great things he did are marred.
Yeah, it was awful.
To me by three things: by his attitude in the back with the boys in the locker room. Because if you not just Bruce Prichard, you listen to any historian of the WWE squared circle, they will tell you not only was Bret a diva, but he was difficult to Austin. You know, he was hard to work. Bret wanted it his way. So you got that. You got the Montreal Screwjob, and then you also have what was the thing I was going to say? It was a third point I was going to make. I forgot. But those are the things that kind of mar the legacy of Bret. That's what it was. It was the WCW thing. It was WCW, Montreal, and his attitude. It overshadows how great Bret was in the ring and the technicality of who he was as a performer, as a wrestler.
And look, Bret, you got to give Bret credit for being like really the first super successful wrestler who started off in a tag and broke off in the singles. You got to get Bret was really the first champion in the Monday Night Raw era to wrestle on television. Because, you go pre-Raw, like when Hogan was champion, you never saw Hogan on television. No. The only time Hogan would be with Gorilla Monsoon cutting a promo for Superstars. Bret was the first WWE champion to wrestle. He was the first workhorse champion. For years, the Intercontinental Champion was the workhorse champion. It was like Hogan would go out, do his 6-minute main event and pose, but whether it was Bret, whether it was Mr. Perfect, whether it was Tito Santana, Greg the Hammer Valentine, Rick Rude, the Intercontinental Champion was the ones going to house shows wrestling 30 minutes.
So wait, let me QB this thing real quick because I don't want us to spend too much time. We're nearing the 30-minute mark. I want to just hit on Owen Hart real quick. So with everything you just said, Big D, with everything you just said, Dante, with Bret gone, Owen still in the company. Owen wins King of the Ring.
The King of Heart. 94.
So you've got in 94 to when does Owen die? 97? 99. 99. Okay. So man, wow. So you've got 94 to 99. You've got white hot baby faces. I mean, these were some of the hottest baby faces I think that company has ever seen. Austin and Rock. The guys couldn't get a boo. Where does Owen fit in that rivalry? Who does Owen have a rivalry with? You mentioned he would be champion several times over. Who is he winning the belt from? Because we identify Rock and Austin. It's just it's natural inclination. We identify Randy Orton and John Cena. We identify Rick
Rick and Dusty or Rick?
Rick and Dusty's one too, but Rick and not Rick, Macho Man and I'm drawing a blank.
Ricky Steamboat.
Yes, I don't know what happened.
So
who do you draw Owen with?
So here's the thing: you could draw Owen with either one. Here's the great thing about Owen. Owen can work with me. He can work with anybody.
Yeah.
He's going to bump for everybody.
Yeah.
And the reason I say he'd been a world heavyweight champion several times is because, number one, if you look at Steve Austin's career, he was a multi-time champion, but his runs were 3-4 months.
Yeah.
For one simple reason. Because the Steve Austin character is better chasing the title. He's better chasing than having the championship.
Right.
So, Owen's the perfect heel. He's not Brock Lesnar, obviously. Because a heel like Brock is limited because you don't have 15 Braun Strowmans to put in the ring with Brock.
Yeah.
So anytime Brock's your champion, your heel champion, the babyface is always working underneath. You're going to always have to make the comeback and pull off the improbable. That's pretty much the only story you can tell with Brock. And Brock does it phenomenally well. But with Owen, Owen's beatable. So it's like, how the hell did he win this match? You just hear Jim Ross, not like this. No. But he's beatable, but he's believable because he was so good in the ring.
Yeah, he was.
And Owen was such like Owen. I have my facial expression, guys, and I think Booker T is the greatest performer to ever tell a story with his face. But Owen's another guy that could tell a story with his face.
Oh yeah. He can.
Right. So even though you put him in with Rock and Rock, when Rock was wrestling, he was 6'4", 285, and it's kind of like, Well, there's the story. There's no way Owens going to leave this ring with that championship until he does.
Until he does.
And then Owens so good on the microphone, he's going to come back the next night and just tell you how he decimated The Rock.
All right. So
I think any whichever babyface is the hottest, a guy like Owen is going to make that babyface look like $1 million.
Let me quarterback this thing again. Okay. Right. I'm going to segue us into the next point, but you mentioned facial features. I don't remember if you remember me telling you this. My favorite moment of Owen Hart, my cousin had this on VHS. So shout out to Joey. Or we were watching it on his cheetah box. I can't remember. Owen Hart faces Bret Hart in a cage match. Bret has Owen in the sharpshooter. And you can literally hear, this is when I fell in love with him. You can hear him screaming, "Stop, stop, I'm your brother."
Your brother.
My all-time favorite Owen Hart.
He was so good.
So everybody likes, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, man. I'm sorry.
No, I was just gonna say he was really, before he died, he was really starting to come up with
something. Nugget, right? Nugget, and he was embracing that. Owen is one of those guys. He could make anything work, any gimmick stick. Okay, so listen, everybody likes a good whodunit story. I actually hate them. I hated the one with Vince McMahon. I hated the one with, Rikishi running over The Rock. Was it The Rock or Stone Cold? Who did
Stone
he run
Cold.
Over? He ran over Stone Cold. I freaking hate whodunit stories. But for whatever reason, Vince, he loves them. I think that you like them. You guys are weirdos to me. the big whodunit story that has kind of reached the pinnacle of development included Roman Reigns and somebody. This is the part, Dante, of professional wrestling that if like my wife or somebody who's not familiar with the product, they just decided to watch on a whim Monday Night Raw or SmackDown, I would not have them watch this. This is one of those things that's just ridiculous. Like, who tried to murder Roman Reigns? What? So what are your thoughts on this? Who done it?
But although it's obvious, like when the scaffolding falls on him.
Ridiculous.
It's not, it doesn't pin him down because he just kind of crawls out from underneath it.
If someone's trying to murder you, wouldn't you call the authorities? Like, that's the first thing.
Yeah.
Who's murdering you? Okay, so what do you think about the whodunit, Roman
so,
Reigns?
So when it happened, I'm like, okay, something different. And I get it. They're trying to give Seth. And that's a different story, and it's not on the format, so I'm not going to go down that road.
I know where you're going, though.
They're trying to get Seth, and they're trying to get Kofi Drew to be champions. But you want Roman Reigns, who people can say what they want. He's the biggest company. And if this was 1989 and not 2019, Roman would have been World Heavyweight Champion for 2 years consecutively. But you're trying to involve him in something meaningful, but not where it could lead to a championship match.
Mm-hmm.
Get it. Fine. Okay. But if you're going to tell it, at least have it make sense. Like, I'm like, okay. But at the same time, I like what they've done. Like, it's very 80s territory,
mm-hmm.
where like they've used the story to help get Buddy Murphy over.
Yeah, I was typing that. Yeah.
Which I'm so happy because, man, Buddy is so good.
He is.
And then they're trying to use it to do something with Rome. The one thing they should not have done was let him talk. Because that promo after he like Iron Claw slammed Roman Reigns was awful. I mean, it was a dud. But it's like, okay, so if Rowan did it and he shoves Daniel Bryan because he doesn't want to be controlled by anyone, then I'm kind of like, then how come he doesn't turn on Daniel Bryan?
Well, he did, right? He iron clawed him to the
Yes, he did. So does this lead to a three-way match? Because now they're both mad at Rowan? Because it would make sense if all of a sudden, like, Daniel Bryan comes out, tonight. I didn't watch SmackDown tonight.
Oh, yeah, I didn't either.
But, like, if because we're recording on Tuesday, like, if he came out tonight and said, I want to be in that match. I want a piece of Eric Rowan. There's no way he's going to do that to me because he didn't recycle this morning or whatever Daniel Bryan's going to say. And then in the match, he and Rowan, like, beat the crap out of Roman because it was this intricate plot to kind of trap Roman so you can have a feud with Daniel Bryan. That would sort of make sense. I want to know what happened to the Roman Reigns look. What happened to the Eric Rowan lookalike guy? Where did he go?
Man, so...
Yeah, so it's ridiculous, but I do think they've used it in a decent way.
I just want WWE to be more realistic, and I don't know if that's like, I know, ironic for me to say since this is professional wrestling and grown men run around in, you know, tidy whities and you have people dressed up as a clown and as a fiend. So how realistic can you be when there's a character named Hornswoggle? But come on, Dante. Like, this is the kind of stuff that the lack of creativity, this is what pisses me off. It reminds me of Vince McMahon walking to the limo and the limo blows up. And, you know, Bruce Prichard talks about, well, Conrad says, well, why did you guys...
Wait, Vince, I know the quote.
Vince was
quote.
Ready to be off of TV, so...
I can't be on TV if I'm dead.
That's ridiculous, man. That's stupid.
Because Bruce goes, well, what if we want to bring you back? He goes, well, they'll forget by then. And here's the crazy thing. Vince was right.
He was right.
Nobody cared that he came back to life.
You conditioned us, right? You conditioned us to know that these are singled out moments that have no real cadence or have no real canon, you know, in life. This isn't a Marvel movie. It's not going to carry over to the next major pay-per-view. But if you wanted a way to get Roman in front of Daniel Bryan, you know, that's a great feud. I would pay money to see that. Do I think you could have come up with a better creative way to do that? Heck yes. Come on. Like, the literal words were, who's trying to murder Roman? What? is this an episode of Murder, She Wrote? Are we watching Matlock? Who is murdering people like with a knife? Like, what? What? This is ridiculous.
I gotta tell you, that might not have been Vince. As someone who watched his fair share of ECW, not just during the TNN days, but during like the sometimes twice a month, sometimes every Thursday syndication days on an old school WJYS when ECW was still being taped in the bingo hall. Like, that has Paul Heyman's fingerprints all over it.
It does smell of Paul. It does smell of Paul. It reeks of Heyman, which is, I'm mad that I'm mad about it. Like, anything with Paul Heyman, I want to like. You know what I mean? So I'm mad that I'm upset. But come on, it's just a lack of creativity, man. Give us Russo back. Let me quarterback this thing again, man. I want to move to the next point. We're making good time in here.
Okay, let me. Can I start with this?
Oh, I had a great like intro I was gonna do, but go ahead.
I know, but I'm not gonna let you do it.
okay, well we gotta switch the roles in. So you gotta introduce it, and then I'll expound on it.
Okay, so in something that pleased my pleasure center.
That did not sound right. Didn't want you to know.
Sasha Banks turned heel. And then her promo in the middle of the ring kind of fizzled. But it's something that shocked me, but I didn't mind. Bayley turns heel.
Yeah, you've been talking about that.
Because Bayley's a good friend. But then you beat up Charlotte. So you're gonna go and clash with champions. And listen, don't get me wrong, Charlotte's cheer. And Charlotte just got the respect. Now it's gonna be like, I think like Charlotte may have to like kidnap someone's child to get booed now. But you're still going in the Clash of Champions in this title match with two heels.
Yeah.
And I mean, just sheerly because Charlotte Flair is 6 foot tall and muscular, it's hard for her. She gets the respect because she's Ric Flair's daughter and she's the greatest woman's wrestler of all time now. So she gets that respect, but she doesn't get sympathy as a baby face. And there's no one you can put in the ring with her other than Nia Jax that you're like, man, I don't know if she can win this one. Like, even when she was in the ring with Ronda Rousey, it's like, yeah, okay, I know Ronda's like a legit judo player and a legit MMA champion, but she's kind of little next to Charlotte.
Yeah, she is.
I mean, like, I think Ronda's like 5'6", 5'7", and Charlotte's legit 6 foot. She's like somewhere between 5'11", and 6'1". I don't remember. So I'm like, okay, so they're beating up Charlotte because they're bad guys. And so that's, okay, bad guys are supposed to do that. But they're beating up another bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that, my kayfabe brain couldn't process that. Because they're not rebels. Like, Stone Cold beat up everyone because he was a rebel. I mean, he was a babyface, but he was a rebel, so he didn't care who he beat up. He beat up babyface and nails. But they're supposed to be bad. I thought villains stuck together until it was time for them to stab one another in the back. So I'm like, so when this match at Clash of Champions comes between Bayley and Charlotte, who am I supposed to cheer for? And who am I supposed to boo? And who's supposed to be champion? Because, like, if Charlotte gets screwed in a way she should get screwed because she's a heel, but Bayley should screw her because she's a heel.
Too.
So I don't know. I'm just confused. So help me if you can.
I can't help you. I don't even think that WWE Creative can help you right now because they don't know what the hell they're doing. I will say that. Let me take it back. Let me rewind to when Sasha came back, right? Because we hadn't recorded since it was before then.
Yeah, we have not recorded. We did not record. The Sasha heel turn.
So, you know, Sasha comes back, and I was really surprised, Dante, that they let her work this angle of Natalya talking about Anvil, Neidhart, her dead father, the way that she did. And I got why they did it. I was just really surprised, like, that family was okay with that because I know how super protective they are of their family members, of that whole lineage. I loved it, though. Like, you got a chance to dig in and believe Sasha Banks as being this bad heel. I loved the chair shots to Becky Lynch. I loved everything except moments that Natalya had to get physically involved. Other than that, it was great.
Oh, wait. So when she's beating up Becky, did you notice, like, when Becky was, like down by the barricade, like Becky, like it almost looked like she worked herself into a shoot, because like Sasha was like stiff, and Becky like just kind of kicked her, like, get off me, you hit me too hard.
Yeah. She was. So I'm thinking here. Okay, so cool. We're setting up. So I'm thinking, you know, in my mind, kayfabe mind, we're setting up. Sasha comes back after long hiatus. She's the boss, and she's going after the belt. But then you throw the curveball, you know, I don't know if WWE just can't leave good enough alone, Or maybe there's something I'm not seeing here, okay? Then you bring in the Bailey factor, and I'm still, okay, they're mm-hmm. best friends. This makes perfect sense. Bailey's not going to turn her back on her best friend. Loyal. I love it. I'm okay with that. But now you have Charlotte and Becky on one side. And then Sasha and Bailey on the other side. And like you said, I'm confused. And I think this is one of those instances where WWE Creative kind of let momentum get ahead of them.
Mm-hmm.
And made something without really knowing where it was going to go. And WWE is infamous for this. They will set something up without there being any indication of what it will be long term. Like, what's going to come two pay-per-views after this? You know what I mean?
Like, both champions they have currently.
Right. Mm-hmm. What's the storyline here? And so I can't give you an answer. All I can say is I'm very happy that Sasha Banks is back.
Yes.
that I'm super pleased that I follow WWE and Sasha on my Instagram feed. So whenever I see pictures of her doing a promo or some kind of caption, I'm happy because I think that our women's division needed her. You hear me? Not because of a lack of good performers, a lack of story, a lack of depth, a lack of depth. I think that she adds that to it, and I'm just really happy for this. I don't even want to say women's division. I'm just really happy for this women's extension. I'm happy for that they have this,
yeah,
because they so sorely needed Sasha. Yeah, Sasha Banks.
I like and here's the thing, the positive about Bailey. When she came out last Tuesday, and she started talking, I mean, there were like little girls booing her. Like she did a fantastic job. She just kind of engulfed all that heat. But my concern is that since she's with her super best friend Sasha, that she's not going to be able to keep that heat for herself. That is going to kind of still go off on Sasha, unless
this is, I have a thought. Go ahead.
This is the only thing I can think of. Bailey's kind of mad that Sasha did what she did. That she's just trying to play Sasha, and she's going to turn on Sasha, and then they'll have the rivalry they're supposed to have. Which I'm not going to like that, because I don't think that, to me, the Sasha Bailey continuum, number one, it never rested on their friendship.
Mm.
It's always rested on the fact that, except for that one night in Brooklyn, Bailey could never beat Sasha. Like, Charlotte was in the stratosphere, and Becky was the afterthought. And then between, you had Sasha and Bailey, and Sasha was always like just that much better than Bailey. And Bailey could never win.
What if you do this? Riddle me this. And kind of come on this journey as I dig into this, as I lean into this a little bit. What if Bailey does a complete Hulk Hogan? What if she turns Hollywood-esque Hogan, right? And the reason I say that is you mentioned something key. You mentioned there were little girls in the audience booing Bailey. Imagine the kids that grew up saying your prayers and eating your vitamins, watching Hulk Hogan leg drop Macho Man Randy Savage, and then he spray paints NWO onto him. And then the following few weeks, you see him in black and silver, and he turns into Hollywood Hogan. What if, I think that Bailey has the baby face appeal, that if she turns total dark heel like that, I think that alone would be credence for her to be able to carry that heat by herself. As long as WWE can book her the right way, I fully think, I see nothing wrong with a year from now, 6 months maybe, Bailey versus Sasha Banks at WrestleMania.
And
in this instance, Sasha's the baby face. Bayley is the complete heel. I think you can make that work if they do it right.
So my question is,
dun, 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 dun.
Do you think that one Pamela Rose Martinez, aka Bayley, can she pull that off without it looking contrived?
Listen, you made some really good, strong arguments a couple of a month ago or so, what Bayley would have to do aesthetically to pull that off. And Dante, and here's the thing. When you're navigating through these waters, WWE does not have to recreate an entirely new wheel. Follow the blueprint you've already made. You did the same thing with Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan could not be the extreme heel that he was wearing the bright yellow and red. He had to go to darker colors. It just made freaking sense. He's a heel. Mm-hmm. And because we automatically identify him with those colors, you got to change the imagery we have of him. I think Bayley could pull it off, but she's going to have to go through some drastic aesthetic external changes to be able to make that thing fit. She can't be the, and you said all of this, she can't be the Bayley that we know that we used to see.
I agree.
If you tweak those things, damn it, I think not only will it work, I think that WWE has the potential to make something great with that. You hear me?
I agree.
I think that Bayley turning complete heel, and it wouldn't work with any other female superstar, as well as with Bayley, because she's the hugger. Do you remember when we went to that house show and Bayley's music hit? All those little girls. Oh my gosh. Even at home, like if I'm watching the network here or I'm playing WWE 2K and my daughter, my youngest, my 5-year-old, is that Bayley, daddy?
Oh my God.
I freaking love Bayley.
My daughter loves Bayley. It's ironic because she wants to kick people like Asuka, but she loves Bayley.
And just like we loved Hulk Hogan.
I did not love Hulk Hogan. You know,
well, okay, in retrospect, yeah. In general, the vast majority of the nation loved him. When he turned heel, it worked. I think that, and you've got that with Bayley. She's the hugger.
If she can pull it off.
She's the only person that has those huggy things blowing up when she comes out, dude. She's the hugger.
My only concern with Bayley turning full heel is her promo.
Okay.
Because she's not a great promo. But I agree. And, you know, but I did kind of like the whole, I'm showing your daughters how to be a loyal friend. So I'm turning heel with my friend because she's my best friend. And I'm going to do whatever she's going to do. I like that part of it.
And then Dante, that sets up the feud right there.
Yeah.
Because guess what's going to happen? Sasha is going to want that belt. It doesn't matter how chummy you are. This if WWE just lets, all you got to do, was what my grandfather taught me when he would let me drive, and he would let me sit in his lap, in his Cadillac that was tan, that had a rooftop, a diamond in the back, a sun rooftop. he would let me sit in his lap. He would say, you know, just let the car drive itself.
Mm-hmm.
All WWE is just, all they have to do is let this car drive itself. The story is already there, man. And it's golden. I'm salivating at the thought.
I hear.
Oh, that's good TV. That is good. I sound like Bruce Pritchard. That's good TV. That's good TV. All right, listen, we got to go to the next.
Okay, so.
I took a little too long with that.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
Any general thoughts about All Out? I did not watch All Out.
I didn't watch it either. I did get some updates. Yeah.
I'm going to try to watch. This is the only thing I wanted to say. This is the only thing I wanted to say. I wanted to say two things about All Out and AEW in general. So I watched Fight for the Fallen. I watched All In. I watched Double or Nothing. And they put on good shows. And so primarily kind of this continuum of pay-per-views for AEW they're sorting out kind of who's going to be their lead dogs on television. Yep. And I get that. Chris Jericho as the champion made sense.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, he's a heel. And you can't build baby faces without heels on top. And you know, Jericho's knocking on 50, but he can still work. But, and I don't remember the name of their next show.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's like Gears of something. But I was kind of wondering in the back of my mind, and I want to give credit where credit was due, because I was thinking it, but David Shoemaker said it on the Masked Man show. Like, I was kind of wondering, like, how long is Cody going to try to stay out of the main event?
Mm-hmm.
Because here's the thing. The Bucks have their following. Kenny may be the best wrestler on planet Earth, but Cody Rhodes is the biggest star in the company. As collaborative an effort as AEW might have been between the Bucks, Kenny, and Cody, people perceive AEW to be Cody's.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, he's the biggest star in the company. So, and he's the biggest star. Number one, his last name is Rhodes. And mm-hmm. yeah, and Dusty hasn't wrestled full time. And, you know, of course, you know, Dusty he Rhodes. Passed Dusty. On a few, Dusty. But he hadn't, Dusty before Rhodes, he even baby. Passed, Dusty. He hadn't wrestled full time in 20 some odd years.
My belly might be big, baby, but then I'm a working man. I'm
but
working
his sphere of influence.
Is it like my Dusty Rhodes impression?
It's getting better. It's getting baby, it's getting better, but
baby,
you got to get a
little
funky with it,
baby.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm not talking, baby. I'm working, man.
Gotta get funky like a monkey, if you know what I'm saying.
Funky like a monkey, you know.
Funky baby. Like a monkey. But, yeah, because I'm going to be honest. I would have went straight formulaic. I'd be like, look, Cody, you're going to be the first champion. You're going to be the heel champion and the heel owner. And people are going to love it. But they decided not to go that way. But once again, Jericho makes sense because next to Cody, Jericho's the famous face. So he can take a guy like as JR would say, like Hangman and a page, Hangman, and make him. Because Adam Page is a fantastic pro wrestler. But unless you're a hardcore wrestling fan, you don't know who that is.
Yep.
Like, yeah. I saw Hangman Adam Page 2 years ago at the Odeon come out with the Bullet Club when Adam Cole was leader of the Bullet Club and they beat up Kenny Omega in the middle of the ring during Ring of Honor War of the Worlds. And I watched him perform at Wrestle Kingdom. But if you are a casual fan, you don't know who that is. So him at the top making guys is going to help. But next to Jericho, Cody needs to be at the top of the card. He can't hide anymore. If they're going to draw money, he needs to be at the top of the card.
I'm going to push back just slightly, right? And because this is our last point of the show, I'm really going to push back because we have nowhere else to go. But I agree. I agree with you that he does need to be that head guy, but not right now. You know. I want to say to you and to everybody else that wants Cody to be that, he could very well be the Triple H of the company. He could be the Paul Levesque. Levesque? Levesque? The Paul, he could be the terrorizing of AEW. He could be the Vince McMahon. Brandi Rhodes could be the Stephanie. Man, they can do their own thing because, you know, like you said, Khan's own it, but it's Cody's company.
It is.
It's Cody's company, and that's the perception. He's Rhodes. His last name is wrestling royalty. Dusty Rhodes was not only a phenomenal wrestler, he was a great promoter. He ran, what was the eastern side of the promotions, Dante? You know better than I do.
Dusty, if you go by what a lot of the old guys did, Dusty made Atlanta, and he definitely made Florida. He set Florida on fire.
He made Florida. So royalty is in their last name. But I would caution doing it right away. You know, you can't come out the gate and do it. You alluded to that. You said it. You know, we got to build up these other guys. But we've got a long time for AEW. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're going to be here for a while. And I think hopefully. And with that, you don't put your best horses out in the race immediately. You know, you put some other studs out there. You got Chris Jericho. I think Chris Jericho is an excellent, you know, top 50. If you're talking about not just top 50, he's top 20, top 10. Jericho's up there. I mean, he in every list, in every category, Jericho's in that list to me, because he is worth all of the hype. Jericho is one of the best wrestlers that we have ever seen walk planet Earth.
Okay, so I have a question.
Yes. Let me make my point first. I don't want to forget.
Okay, finish your point.
Come back to that. Put your finger there. So having Chris as the first champion heel makes perfect sense. I don't want Cody in that picture yet. And I know it's coming, but I don't want to rush it. Like you were saying that he needs to do it like today. Like, no, it needs to be something that develops over time. Let me get used to this other roster. Because once you guys get on TV, I'm going to be introduced and reintroduced to new people. And let's be completely honest, Dante. Let's not act like AEW isn't the Golden State Warriors. Let me take that back. Give a better example. Let's not act like AEW isn't the Los Angeles Lakers with LeBron James. People want to take their ball and play there. Let's start with the Wolf. We know that WWE has some loyal Seth Rollinses. They got some loyal Roman Reignses. But they also have a lot of disgruntled Dolph Zigglers. They have some bothered Luke Harpers. They have some quality A-plus players, B-plus players, C-plus players who will not mind taking their bag, their gym bag, and going to play AEW. AEW has a great roster, but I can almost guarantee that you're going to see some more stars come, not just from WWE, but from New Japan, from even possibly Ring of Honor, that are going to come from all over, come from the indie circuit, because AEW is that place to be right now. So why put Cody in that position now? It doesn't have to happen right away. Vince became the greatest heel in professional wrestling because his father was the originator of WWF. But Vince wasn't touting that. Vince was an announcer. Vince was doing play-by-play. It wasn't until maybe 20 years later that Vince got into this role of let me embrace who I am in real life and play that character. I think if Cody, again, here's the beautiful thing about wrestling. The Bible, you know this, preacher. There's nothing new under the sun. There's nothing new in professional wrestling. It just comes full circle. All AEW has to do, if you're talking about booking Cody, how you position him, follow the blueprint of what WWE did with Vince. Follow the blueprint of what WCW tried to do with some of the mainstay players as it relates to that owner position.
But they tried to do it with Bischoff.
Tried to do it with Bischoff. You know, just and then give it some time.
Well,
and then when he does it, and Brandy fully, oh man. When Cody gets some championships under his belt, oh man. And I would love to see, I'm salivating again, Dante. Get the napkin and paper towel, I'm salivating. I would love to see the Young Bucks and Cody break off and now they're feuding. You think you're on my level? I started this company.
Yeah.
I gave you, when you were on the indies working for 50 people, I was headlining WrestleManias. I gave you, and you think you're on my level? Oh, Chris, I gave a washed-up wrestler his eighth chance. Please, you're not on my level, sir. I want to see that.
Okay.
Kenny, your best match was with me. And that was a match I chose to have because you couldn't get to me by yourself. Oh, I'm a rogue.
Okay, so this
I want to see that.
So
I just hyped myself up.
One comment, one question.
Pay me.
One comment, one question.
What?
The reason that they need to do it sooner rather than later is because, according to Bruce Pritchard's best friend Dave Meltzer, they've had issues moving tickets for that first TV show. And he's the biggest draw in the company. Second, my second question is, who do you have on it? Because we're talking television. We're not just talking about like the fight.tv app and all these hardcore wrestling fans watching it, and John Cena sucks and Kenny Omega is the king of everything. We're talking, I'm on my television dial watching television. Who do they have that can get guys who are unknown over other than Chris Jericho?
I will give you two answers to that. My first answer is John Moxley.
WWE guy, continue. That makes my point.
Okay, but that's fine. But still, he has that name recognition.
And I would argue he doesn't have Cody's star power.
Okay, no, but if you're talking about
Let me get my second answer.
My first is John Moxley. My second is, you tell us. Okay, and WCW did it. Let's use for an example Goldberg. We didn't know who Goldberg was, this MMA fighter, mm-hmm. before he came to WCW. They told us who he was, and they mm-hmm. told us, this is who you're gonna get mm-hmm. behind. That's what professional wrestling is about. You build up a character,
that's true,
and you tell us the story you want us to believe.
But you know who got Goldberg over?
Who's that?
Hulk Hogan. Hogan got Goldberg over.
That was the story they told. Now I would even say this, Dante, crucify me, nail me to the cross if you want to, okay? Nail me to the ring. Even if WCW wouldn't have used Hulk Hogan, if they would have used Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, Lex Luger, it don't matter to me, whoever they used, I think he still would have gotten over.
He would not have gotten over nearly as huge. He needed to beat Hogan. And I'm going to give you a parallel. You probably don't know The Undertaker's debut.
It was in WCW.
No. His WWF debut.
Oh.
It was at Survivor Series.
He fought Hogan, didn't he?
And won the championship.
Yeah.
First night. Who got him over? The biggest star in the company. Who got Goldberg over? Goldberg was coming out. It was like pyro, breathe fire, spear, jackhammer, done. Who is this guy? He's just decimating people. And when that happens, naturally you go, okay, well, he hasn't really faced anybody. Okay. Oh, my gosh, he's about to wrestle Hulk Hogan. He can't do that to Hogan until he does. That gets him over.
Okay, so My point is,
not necessarily that Cody needs to be, like, the champion. Now, the old school in me, like, you know, when Greg Gagne started the AWA, what did Greg Gagne do? He put the title on himself. And pretty much every promoter that still works put the title on themselves. But what I'm saying is, like, whoever Jericho's wrestling in the main event, Cody needs to be in the other main event. He needs to be at the top. He has to be at the top of the card. I mean, they're not – they're number one because apparently they're having issues – selling tickets. You don't want a TV show,
mm-hmm.
and you're panning out an arena or a stadium or wherever you are, and it's like three quarters full, and it's obvious. Cody's the best draw in that company. Like, even if they've – look, my thing is – and here's the best thing about Cody, because he's still in his prime.
Mm-hmm.
Cody can lose, and it won't affect him. Like, at this point, when Jericho loses, it's going to be hard for him to go another direction because, like, he's old. Mm-hmm. Of course he should lose. Like, when he puts Hangman Page over, I don't know what direction they're going to with Jericho, because Jericho's old. And he looks old, by the way. But he needs to slow down on the vodka and the rock and roll shows. He looks
old. He does. He looks terrible.
But Cody can absorb losses.
You know what I want to see? When Cody does flip and go to the dark side, I want them to do Cody like they did Rock when he was corporate Rock and he had that his own pay-per-view called Rock Bottom. I want Cody Rhodes to like get his own pay-per-views. I want before AEW show starts, I want him to come out and say, "This is the Rhodes show." I want him to do something so over the top. Like, he needs to be that over the top.
Here's the thing that people miss about the Cody Rhodes persona. He gets cheered because of what he's doing in pro wrestling, but he's the American Nightmare. He's a heel.
He is. He's a heel.
I've got the shirt. He's a heel. He gets cheered because he dared to challenge the system. But Cody wears a $5,000 suit and probably has the hottest wife in professional wrestling. Oh, he's a heel.
He's a heel.
Oh, yeah.
He's a heel.
And I love it.
All right, man. Wrap us up. Take us home, preacher.
So, those are pretty much my final thoughts about AEW and about Cody. Man, watch wrestling. And I don't know what they're doing with my man Braun Strowman.
I know. I can update you later on. You can call me tomorrow. I've tried to call you, but you failed to answer the phone. I do call you at like 7:30 in the morning, though. So I get it.
Here's my sermon closing. It's really short, and I'm literally going to take my seat after I say this. I'm very curious to see what NXT looks like on USA.
Let's have that conversation next podcast. I've got some thoughts on that. I've got some really interesting thoughts and some really good intel, and I'm interested to see it too, man.
So tell everybody where they can find you.
Hey, man, you can find me on social media. The @ Desmond, DezimonAlicea, no simple names, just my government name. Yeah.
So you can find me also on the Twitter machine @PastorDDP. You can now find your boy on Instagram. I am Prior the Good Kid. The name inspired by my dad, who used to call me the Good Kid. On Instagram, and of course, for all of your beautiful college football podcastery, you can find me on the Triple Option Podcast, available on Spotify, Anchor, and Apple iTunes.
And you can find this podcast in those same places too.
You can also find us on the Preachers and Pinfalls Facebook page.
Yeah, and do me a favor, guys. If I was going through the podcast today, write a review if you enjoy it. Now, if you guys don't write a review, we're going to have to ask our wives, my grandma, right? And it just won't feel the same. So we would rather people who listen to the show and enjoy it, who are true wrestling fans. I've been inviting people, some wrestling fanatics, to check it out. And tell us what you think, guys. Maybe me and Dante and I would talk about getting to some I just went to a toy con this past weekend, Dante, and I had the thought, man, it would have been cool. We could do some stuff like that, because they had wrestlers, about my son, some wrestling figures, some Attitude Era, Chris Jericho, Rock, Kane, Stone Cold. You know, there are a lot of wrestling fans there. So maybe you guys will see us pop up at one of these events, and we'll just have a podcast, right? Maybe we'll do something like that. But who knows? But if you don't write a review and leave a star, you never know.
That is true. So if all minds are clear, lay people of the leg lock. This is the benediction. Until next time.